This is Susan V. Brock of Telluride Inside and Out, and I'm talking to the one, the only, Otis Taylor. He's coming to town for Blues and Brews with, I don't know, it sounds like a cast of thousands. So, hello, Otis.
How you doing?
You're a regular in Telluride. Are you looking forward to this trip?
Oh, it's been one of my favorite places to come to.
Why is that?
I don't know. That's a good question. How can you explain love?
That's the answer. Stop right there. Talk about your march to your musical present. You were raised by jazz musicians, right?
No. My father was a jazz fan. He was not a jazz musician.
Okay.
With jazz, we hung. But my uncle was a jazz sax player through marriage, and they knew a lot of jazz musicians.
Okay.
They were beboppers, you know.
Just
in the 50s, white people were beatniks and black people were beboppers.
Yeah, got it. I just saw a documentary by a woman called Hannah Rothschild about the jazz baroness and the whole dawn of the bebop era with Thelonious Monk and Charlie Parker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was more segregated than people think it was. You see what I'm saying? The black and white people didn't in jazz world didn't hang out as much as people think they did.
Yeah, only in this one case. Nika Rothschild was sort of the center of a whole jazz movement in New York in the 50s.
Yeah, but they always went back home.
Yeah, exactly. except when they didn't. Thelonious Monk often stayed in her apartment, but that's a whole other story.
That is, but it's an important story to people to understand that I was raised in the 50s, and things were different then. Which has to do with the way I write my songs.
And how is that?
My point of reference about racism is a point of reference of a man who lived in the 50s.
When blacks had to walk in the back doors of the clubs in which they were performing.
Oh, no, when blacks had to go to different bathrooms down south.
Yeah.
People were getting lynched, and, you know, it's a different reference point for me.
Okay.
I'm 61 years old, you know?
Just a baby.
I guess so.
So,
go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me back the interview. So who's in the band? This, I don't know if I can call it a band, the cast of that.
In this group, Cassie Taylor, naturally, Terrence Malloyd, guitar, Ann Harris, incredible violin player. I have a drummer named Larry Thompson, who's a fantastic drummer, who just played on my newest album. Then I have Fada, Malway and Ali Du on djembe. Two are from Ghana, one's from Guinea. I have Val, who lives in Telluride, on cello. And then a special guest, Jason Ritchie, on harmonica.
Yeah.
A lot of people.
A lot of people. Oh, so in all, how many do you number?
I don't know. Did you count that up? Eight?
No, I looked. You were speaking too quickly. Never mind the number.
I don't count them until they show up.
Who do you plan to catch up with at the Blues and Brews Festival?
Well, maybe I'll say hi to Buddy Guy. I've got to sit in with Buddy before. I'll see. You know, I'll probably try to stay for the whole weekend, like a mini vacation. You know, and that's all probably.
Okay.
But I know.
Let's move on to Pentatonic.
That was exciting, wasn't it? That question was killer, wasn't it?
Which one?
Who am I going to catch up with? Oh, I got to see Steve.
Oh, okay.
And everybody, you know.
For the record, for everyone listening, that's Steve Gumbel, who is the impresario of Blues and Brews. He was the founder, and he is the producer.
And he was my manager for 3 years. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you told me once you thought you put him out of business.
I said that, or he said that?
You said that. He could have said that, but he didn't say it to me.
So. He found out managing was pretty hard. But I wasn't the only one. It wasn't all my fault. Anyway, I regress.
You digress all the time.
Go
so
ahead.
Can I get a line in here? Okay, Pentatonic Wars and Love Songs was released in June this year, and it features your haunting vocals and guitar riffs. What makes this album special and different from past releases? And in a sentence, can you describe what a listener will find in these tunes?
Well, in Pentatonic Wars, it was more like trance jazz, you know. I had Jason Moran, the Sheet Waves, Taurus on his group, you know. So I had a really incredible Jason Mann's band called The Bandwagon play with us, plus Ron Miles. So we had a lot of jazz musicians on that album, plus Gary Moore from England. So we had, you know, heavy metal rock guitar, you know, blues rock guitar player, and jazz people. That's a strange combination.
Yeah. You're a strange guy, it fits.
Am I a strange guy? It's possible. You know, if you're crazy, you don't know you're crazy, so I could be strange, because I don't think so. Does that make sense?
So what makes this one different from the others?
What makes the album different?
Yeah.
What's the intensity? Well, it was supposed to be love songs, but they're kind of dark love songs, and there was some happy songs, which is probably more not like my style. I try to do every album different. That's the whole thing. I'm just finishing up a new album now. Everybody's going, oh, that's really different. So,
are you going to be singing this during your set? Is this part of your set?
What, the new album? I might do one song. Usually I'll do like one song off a new album and start testing it to see which ones I'll tour with, you know?
Okay.
My problem is I'm working on my 11th album. If I did one song from each album, I wouldn't have enough time. So I'll tour mostly some things from Pentatonic and some of my favorites. Chances are we'll do Hey Joe. We always do Hey Joe. I'll do Two Million Slaves because of the Michael Mann movie. I have to do that song now, you know?
That's right.
Because it's really sold a lot on iTunes and people are starting to sing the lyrics, so I'm kind of have to do that, you know? So the more hits you get or the more people know your songs, the more you have to do the ones they like.
Right. Is that a problem for you?
Is it a problem for me to eat? No.
No, I didn't say to eat. Is that a problem for you?
Well, if I make my fans happy, I get to eat.
It's true.
So is that a problem for me? I don't think so. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
What a horrible problem to have.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know? Go ahead. I told you. Here I am. See, I'm starting up on you, aren't I?
You are. But I expect it from you, and now the whole world will hear what you do to me.
Oh, okay. I apologize, sort of.
They'll probably send me letters of consolation saying, poor you, you had to interview him again?
From Antarctica.
I hope so. If you break through to Antarctica for Telluride Inside and Out, and we finally have that continent too, I'll send you roses.
Okay. You never know. Stranger things happen.
So, can I get back to a serious question?
Sure.
A semi-serious question. Your publicist, Kelly, wanted me to ask this.
Oh.
How do you feel when you watch a movie and hear one of your tunes? In addition to Public Enemies, you also had a track on Shooter featuring Mark Wahlberg. It was
The Badge, too.
Do any of these tracks that are chosen hold extra special meaning when millions of people are exposed to them?
Well, no. I had music in The Badge, too, you know.
Okay.
With Billy Bob Thornton, you know. Well, I think the whole thing about that, to see your music on the big screen is just, I love movies, you know. I'm a Sundance Fellow for film composing in the class of 2000, and I just love movies, you know. I've always loved movies, and so that makes you feel good just to see it on a big screen. I mean, when I first was working with Michael, I got to see it way before, you know, last October, so I already kind of saw that scene, and just to see it in the screening room was like, God, it's so unbelievable. To see how well that song worked with the film. It was just so beautiful.
Yeah, pretty stunning.
It was a very beautiful scene. I don't know if you saw the movie.
Yes.
You know, where he's running. And I said to Michael, I said, those trees were beautiful. He goes, yeah, I put all those trees in a row. He just went to Apple Orchard and told him to move the trees so he gets a path. You know, and they flew around in helicopters to find the right farm to shoot that at. I just, whoa, I wonder why it's so beautiful. You know, he put a lot of energy into that scene, you know, just for the
No, the overall effect with the music was...
Yeah, I was really happy, you know. Can you hold for a second?
Yeah.
I'm doing energy, do not make any noise. Thank you. I'm doing energy, do not make any noise.
Sorry.
No problem.
I'll somebody to be quiet so we didn't get all the background noise.
No problem. At least you didn't do what Todd Snyder did to me when he took a call waiting and he said, oh, I don't know if I can finish this interview. It's NPR. Well, move me along. You've been described as a savant because you don't read music and you claim to have been self-taught. Along the way, did you want to get book learning? Your advice to would-be entertainers, please.
Oh, get an education. always got education, get an advantage. It just didn't work for me. I was dyslexic. It was just really hard.
Is that true, or are you?
Oh, yeah, it's true. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So,
how do you write music when you don't read music?
Well, we have to write everything down. The African Druids didn't write anything down. It was done through spoken word.
Okay, true enough. True enough. So you do or you don't, you do write everything down, or you just feel it out?
I just feel it out. I'm sorry.
No apologies necessary.
That's the way I do it.
Just a question.
You want me to tell you all my secrets? Somebody asked me, how do you produce? I said, I'm not going to answer that question.
Okay.
That's my secret.
I know. There could be people out there listening, taking notes.
Well, I hope so.
But it could become a bit like stage door. Someone's right behind you, ready to claim your place on the stage.
Well, no, you know, I mean, it's my style, you know.
I do know.
You hear Otis Taylor, you know it's Otis Taylor, right?
Yep, for absolutely sure.
Yeah.
So what else do you have up your sleeve? You've got a new album in the works.
Yeah, it's called
Are there any other movies? What's going on in your life? Beyond,
well, no movies.
Beyond
I can't have Hollywood. I can't have Hollywood all the time, you know. They'll call me when they call me, you know. You don't, you know. It just is. I'm happy to have what I got, you know. But I'm working on a new album. It'll be out next year. It's called Clovis People, Volume 3. It'll be out next year.
What is the title about?
Well, Clovis people are caveman people, you know, primitive people. About less than a block from my house, they found a Clovis cache. It's called a cache where they found some skinning tools.
Uh-huh.
You know, like they look like giant arrowheads, and that's a big deal. There's only about 7 of these found in the whole state. I mean, the whole nation, you know. So it's a big deal. So primitive people were walking near my land where I lived. Where I live.
Yeah, primitive people.
It's pretty cool. They could have been standing right here where I'm sitting talking to you.
Exactly.
You know? Just 100 yards, not even 100 yards away, you know. That's pretty close. So I decided to dedicate it after the Clovis people. So I decided to kind of do some old songs and some newer songs, you know. So to go back to the old, earlier primitive Otis Taylor style. That's my rap anyway, you know. That's my theme. I have to always have a concept for my albums.
That was a good theme.
It is a theme.
So,
it's going to be a good album.
Okay, Otis. I'm gonna hear it that weekend, and I'll let you know it. I'll write you and tell you what I thought.
If I do any songs with the new album, I haven't decided. It's one song I might do. I have to decide. I haven't decided yet. But you know what it is? Even if I do some older songs, it'll still be on the new album. See what I mean? Because I'm doing a few older songs, like a song called Harry Turn the Music Up, which was on Blue Eyed Monster that nobody can get. So people get to hear that song for the first time, most of my fans, you know, on the new album, you know. I'll probably do Harry maybe, you know. I don't know. I don't know what I'll do.
I think I'm going to have to head for the hills.
I tried to tell you. I tried to know. You weren't listening. You forgot. Pain has no memory.
This is my third interview with you. I thought I was ready. I'm never ready.
Because pain has no memory. Just remember that. That's why you can fall in love more than once. If pain has memory, you can never fall in love.
I'm totally smitten. But I have to head for the hills.
Well, that's okay. You know, I have an appointment, so.
I know.
Oh, wait a second. Is that NPR? No, no, no. Oh, that's somebody else.
Yeah, Todd, that's NPR. So this is Susan V. Brock trying my best to talk with Otis Taylor, who is
We had a beautiful talk.
We did have a beautiful talk. Okay, I'm going to end this. So we're talking to Otis Taylor. Somebody save me. And on Telluride Inside and Out, he is in town for the 16th Annual Blues and Brews Festival, September 18th through 20th. See you there, Otis.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.